This week's surveillance report covers India's attempt to mandate a potentially invasive app on everybody's phone, legally required. Chat control updates in the EU and concerns there that are still evolving. Half of US states now being age verified. I wish that was an exaggeration. More AI slop, kind of continuing last week's episode. But to cloud encryption. Yes, that's a funny one. And a lot more. Welcome to the TechLore Surveillance Report, your essential weekly tech news, delivering deep analysis on the latest threats to security, privacy, and digital freedom, empowering you to reclaim control and defend your rights. Let's not waste any time. We have a saga that I want to cover, and it's about India, who wanted to mandate smartphone makers to preload state-owned cyber safety app. Now, it's really important that we talk about this in two different contexts. The first context being that this act by itself is a problem, and second, the implementation could be a problem. And I'll discuss these two points and why this has a lot of people concerned, as well as what actually ended up happening, which is overall positive news. But this is a huge concern and should have all of you paying serious attention, not just in India, but to the rest of the world. So about 2 days ago, India's telecoms ministry privately asked smartphone makers to preload all new devices with a state-owned cybersecurity app that cannot be deleted. This isn't new. Russia has been trying to do the same thing, and they're framing these rules blocking the use of stolen phones for fraud or promoting state-backed government service apps. Reuters got a copy of this, and this order was from November 28th, so just a few days ago, and it gives major smartphone companies 90 days to ensure that the government, it's called Sanchar Sathi, I am not Indian, so if I didn't pronounce that correctly, I apologize. If you are Indian, feel free to leave a YouTube comment saying how to pronounce that phonetically. But it would be pre-installed on new mobile phones with a provision that users cannot disable it. That is a very important thing to mention, because nowadays, a lot of system apps, even native ones like Apple Notes and Safari and Apple Mail, can actually all be deleted, especially if you're in the EU. And on Android, it's kind of a similar concept that you can disable even some of Google's apps, but this would be undisableable. Now, the really interesting thing is that this isn't just for new devices leaving the manufacturers. This actually also applies to devices already in people's hands via software updates. This was not made public and was sent privately to select companies, and we kind of just got a hold of this by chance. Now, I don't want to make it sound like this app is just purely installed to just spy on you, because it is presented as having a genuine use case. India has come forward and said the app is mainly designed to help users block and track lost or stolen smartphones across all telecom networks using a central registry. It also lets them identify and disconnect fraudulent mobile connections. So India thinks that this is a way to essentially prevent people from stealing devices, selling them in black markets, and doing other nasty things with devices. And I feel like this is overall a noble effort, and this is probably a common crime that they are trying to combat, but in a pretty invasive way. And people online noticed some pretty immediate issues. This was trending on the front page of Reddit, and I organically stumbled on it on a non-logged-in instance of Reddit, which means that this was just organically high up, and this isn't that common for privacy-related things. But this is on R, interesting as F, a compulsory mandated app installed on every Indian citizen's new phone, and it's a screenshot of the permissions requested by the app on an Android device, and it includes SMS messages, all of them, your phone log, all your photos, media, and files on your device, all the storage on your device, the ability to access your camera and take pictures and videos, device ID and call information, as well as other things, including full network access, the ability to run at startup, prevent the device from sleeping, and honestly, I can't think off the top of my head any other permissions this thing isn't requesting. So this is a highly invasive app. Now, you might already see on the screen that Apple actually is going to resist this, and we'll cover what actually ended up happening. But the two really key issues here that are really important to drill home, because this kind of stuff isn't just proposed in India. We've seen it in Russia, and it will be introduced in other countries in the future. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And there are two unique issues with a lot of these proposals. One of them is fixable, and one of them isn't. The first thing is just the concept of the government having a mandated app on your phone that allows them to have access to everything on your device, like your messages, your phone calls, etc. This should be seen as a pretty dystopian Orwellian attempt at getting user data. That is a huge overstep in privacy and people's rights. If somebody wants to opt into using a system like this, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. Because as far as I can tell, this doesn't seem to have any kind of effect socially. Now, if there is evidence to the contrary, I would definitely like to hear that. But this isn't a situation where if you opt into the system, you're helping keep other people's devices safer. So this is something that I personally envision as more of like an independent safety net. This also kind of discredits some of the tools people already have available to them. Like if you have an iPhone, you already have access to Find My iPhone. And it's pretty difficult to get around that nowadays. And Apple actually has something called stolen device protection, which they released because of phone thefts. So it's unclear how this would kind of help your chances of getting your device back versus something like Apple's. Now, the second issue, and this one theoretically is fixable, but I haven't seen anyone actually tackle that challenge because I don't think these things are actually rolled out for, let's just say, good reasons. But this actually could theoretically be done in a privacy-respecting way. If India came forward and said, hey, we developed an open source app. This is something that we implement with some kind of encryption where we don't even know what's going on. And this is purely out there to be a public service. I actually think that more people would get behind that. And if you don't make it mandated and you make it easy to disable if a user doesn't want to opt into the system, I think those things can actually theoretically exist and actually help people. But that's a lot of ifs. This technology is really hard to do, and governments don't seem really curious or interested in trying them. Now, what happened since then? So Apple actually resisted India's order to preload this after public outcries. The prime ministers, political opponents, and privacy advocates criticized all of this, saying that it was just a way for the government to gain access to India's 730 million smartphones. And in the wake of this criticism, they actually said the app was, quote, voluntary and democratic, adding that users can choose to activate it and can easily delete it from their phone at any time, which is a pretty big difference to what was originally proposed. Now, you might be wondering, what about that November 28th confidential directive? Well, they just never commented on it or clarified about it or discussed it. So I guess they're just going to choose to ignore that original story. And it's worth mentioning that the government has not yet issued an official notification to smartphone manufacturers reflecting the withdrawal, and manufacturers are still waiting for formal instructions. So we don't really know what's going to happen yet. People are presenting this as a win, but if you actually read carefully, you're going to see things like how Samsung hasn't commented on this, and how because Android can be more easily modified, perhaps some more Android manufacturers will actually want to comply with this in their own way. Again, this is concerning for two reasons. The first is whether or not the government should have this much information about all individuals mandated on their devices. The second is if we were to roll something out to actually try to help the public, what would that look like? And the fact that India wasn't really concerned about either of these things, I think is quite alarming and a red flag when it comes to people's digital rights. And if you think this is just an India problem, please save this, bookmark this clip of me saying this is not the last attempt. Other countries will try this. It will happen again. And this is what needs to happen. We need people to speak up. There needs to be public outcry, and there needs to be companies that stand for the right thing. And companies do sometimes stand for the right thing, especially in light of people having actual outrage in the public. So please keep an eye on these stories and keep an eye on this podcast, and I'll be sure to update you all if anything like this happens in the future. Now, we have chat control updates. We have half the US being age verified, AI slop, and butt to cloud encryption, which is hilarious. Just a few updates before I get into those. The first one, it's weird when you're behind the scenes here on the podcast, you know, you listen to this like three or four times total before you publish it, but it's on 1.5x. You're just getting through the edit so you can publish it. So I actually sat down last weekend and listened to it at 1x speed on Spotify. And I noticed a few issues here and there, some weird pacing things, and ways that I can kind of, you know, tell my stories a little bit better. So I'm implementing those, and hopefully that makes this product a little bit better for all of you. Second, I've renamed the final category to be a little bit more interesting and brandable so that it's something we can look forward to each week. And it's just called the Defense Bulletin. So it's not data breaches and updates. It's just the Defense Bulletin. And it includes the same things, which is half of it being data breaches from the last week and the other half being updates to the services that we probably or most of us use who listen to this podcast. So again, defense bulletin, the end of each episode, including this one. So stick around. And the final thing is, I just want to thank you all for your feedback and being engaged with this podcast. It's awesome to see all of you. We're seeing some like crazy record numbers back here on just our first two back on the Techlor channel. So I'm just super grateful for all of you and the feedback you've given. And I hope that we can take this even further going forward. Now we're going to talk about chat control very quickly. There aren't as many updates as there were last week. If you're not familiar, chat control is the EU backdoor for end-to-end encryption that's been proposed for years now, and that so many people are doing a lot to fight as a community, and I've been doing a lot of coverage for this on the channel. And last week I discussed Patrick Breyer's new blog post that talks about the reality check, because chat control is currently kind of presented as a win because they've dropped the mandated encryption backdoors that were originally proposed, but they've kind of replaced that with a few more dangers that Patrick disclosed, which we talked a little bit about last week, which is that voluntary scanning still has its own problems that could still lead to all of your messages and information being leaked and scanned. The second one is about age checks for everyone and how an age-verified internet gets rid of anonymity, which hurts everyone in the process. It hurts journalists, it hurts abuse victims and people who need anonymous access to the internet. And the third one is digital house arrest for teenagers and how teenagers may not get access to basic information on the internet anymore. Now, it's not being covered as much as the first blog, but 2 days afterwards, Patrick put out an updated blog post titled Chat Control Evaluation Report. EU Commission again fails to demonstrate effectiveness of mass surveillance of intimate personal photos and videos. And it's more of a critique of what's been proposed. And so the first one is the argument from ignorance on proportionality. This is a bit of a word legal point that he's trying to make. The commission is arguing that because their data is too fragmented to prove the law is bad, it must be good. So he's calling out this logical fallacy. The second thing he tries to debunk is he cites evidence that the mass scanning of private messages does not contribute significantly to convicting abusers. And that is actually not what the report claims, which is the inverse of that, which is that mass scanning does help in this situation. And he says otherwise. Patrick also comments on the high error rates of these black box algorithms. I think many of us can agree if anything like this was ever to roll out, it should be open source and easy for anybody to verify the accuracy. His fourth point is that the EU cannot effectively oversee the surveillance that it's trying to put forward. The fifth is that there is no way to do scanning without breaking encryption. And the sixth is the failure to assess the privacy intrusion of what's being proposed. And so he has a conclusion, and there are four points that are quite simple. The first one is the technology has double-digit error rates. The efficacy is unproven. The oversight is broken. And the targets, aka encrypted chats, are increasingly immune to it. So that is his formal reason for why this cannot work. And the EFF came forward as well, and they did some amazing coverage too. They take Patrick's points and make it far easier for a regular person to understand. So if you're someone who's less technical, I do recommend going into the sources and checking out the EFF link and seeing if you can also follow Patrick's. But the EFF does a really good job of putting this together cleanly. And they finish this off by saying that they're finishing up the final negotiations of this regulation, and the EFF is urging EU lawmakers to work on a final text that fully protects users' right to private communication and avoids intrusive age verification mandates and risk benchmark systems that lead to surveillance in practice. The EU set a high bar when they released GDPR, and they really put themselves on the map as one of the most respecting regions in the world. And now we are seeing them trying to implement some of the most invasive, surveillance-driven, just awful privacy laws and regulations that we've ever seen. It's such a 180, and it's really sad to see this for myself. But so many good people are fighting this battle right now, and it is not over. This has been going on for years, and it's continued to be watered down over the years. And I don't think that this is as watered down as we can make this kind of initiative. So keep fighting. It isn't over, and you can still make a difference. I'm really happy to see that fightchatcontrol.eu, which is probably the best main resource I can recommend for any of you who want to fight this, which especially if you're in the EU, you should be doing this right now. They have updated it to not make it seem like we've already won. So thank you for that. Last week, I commented how it was presented in a way that we didn't have to do anything anymore. So all of you should still be taking action. This isn't over, and I'll be making a dedicated video about this shortly as well so that we can really get the word out about this. And if you think you're in freedom land in the US, well, I have bad news for you, because now half, yes, half of the US is age verified in some capacity. So let's dive into this one because it is not pleasant. Now, the real update to this story is that Missouri is the latest of the US states to enact its form of age verification law. It's set to further fuel discussion around data privacy and security risks linked to age assurance methods, and has already provoked yet another surge in usage of the best VPN apps. Who could have seen that coming? People don't want to hand over personal private information to private companies who have misleading privacy practices that could leak their information to third parties, which we've seen from companies like Discord and many other organizations. You can actually read this proposal yourself, and I'll leave it linked in the sources for any of you who want to read the primary source. But the summary of what this does for you is all websites or applications containing more than one-third material harmful to minors are required to verify their users are adults before granting them access. Experts have criticized this for its vague terms, which could push the platform to over-censor their content. And as we can all predict, because it's so vague, age gating has happened to way more than adult websites. I want to remind people that Blue Sky has literally been pulled out of a state because they couldn't comply with age verification laws. And it's just a social media platform like Twitter. Also, ALO, the parent company of many of the biggest adult sites, has decided to just block access to everyone in Missouri instead of jeopardizing their users' privacy. And I think that's actually a very noble thing to do that other people should be doing. This isn't something that I think companies should just bend over and comply with. Part of this also includes mobile operating systems with at least 10 million devices in the US must provide digital age verification that a website or application can use to comply with the rules, which means that Apple and Google are likely liable to actually have to implement this kind of age verification. And we see something similar happening right now in Texas, where they are trying to age verify the App Store so that you need to have an ID just to download a weather app in Texas, regardless if you're a child or anyone else, or a calculator app. Literally anything needs to be KYC'd in Texas. Apple and Google are suing, and hopefully they are successful in that because it is a huge privacy violation. But we see Missouri thinks it's a good idea. The EFF has come forward and said, by forcing everyone to hand over their most valuable and sensitive identity data, the law builds out a dangerous new surveillance infrastructure instead of actually keeping young people safe. And this is what we've seen. And they referenced the Discord third-party service got hacked, leaking 70,000 government ID photos used for verifying user ages. Now, this is completely unrelated, but if you're in Missouri and you ever want access to a VPN for, you know, just privacy or just because you don't want your ISP tracking you, you can check out some VPN resources that I'll leave in the sources as well. Has nothing to do with this story, I promise. Now, this actually marks the 25th U.S. state with age verification laws in some capacity. And if you're listening to this and you're wondering what they are, well, it's easy to see on screen because I have a map here. You can check out the source for this in the description, and you can hover over when the law went to effect and also what exactly it entails. And if you want a quick list, Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, Wyoming, and now Missouri. That marks half of the United States that now has age verification laws, which means that this could potentially, if enough traction comes of this, become federal, which is very scary. This does not seem to be bipartisan. If you look at the map right now, these states that are passing this are clearly part of the same party that is in power. And so if they actually really want to push this federally, I think there actually is a lot of support for this right now. And the party in power wants this to happen. This isn't me trying to inherently be political. If this was the inverse, I would be saying the same thing. It's just the reality of the situation, which is that the party that's in power is on a statewide basis going after this stuff. And I don't think that they want to stop at just individual states. I think once enough states have this implemented, they're going to try to go for this federally. And feel free to quote me if I'm ever wrong about this. I hope I am wrong about it, for the record. The only political thing I feel comfortable saying is that if you believe in freedom and that people have the right to kind of control their own life as they please and raise children the way they please and access the internet and free information the way they please, you are not in support of age verification. So anyone who's passing age verification and claiming that they support freedom in any way is not somebody that I'm going to be listening to or giving much respect to. That's my view of them. And if you want to get active and fight this stuff, which all of you should be is if you're in the US, especially if you're in a state where they've already passed this or are trying to pass this, you need to be contacting your representatives. This is some serious stuff. And the sooner that this stuff is stopped, or at least there's enough outrage over it, the sooner that maybe we can tame this and stop age verification from happening. If the US passes federal age verification, that could turn into something really bad for the rest of the world. I will be making a dedicated video on this shortly, so stay subscribed to the YouTube channel if you want to see more. Now, something you probably don't want to see more of is your data on Google and other people searching websites. And that's exactly what the sponsor of this episode, Easy Opt-Outs, tries to do. Easy Opt-Outs allows you to submit your basic information to them, as little or as much as you want to. And for $20 a year, there is no better priced service I could find for this. They will go ahead and find which services have your data and send your information to opt you out of those services. Many of these data removal services were actually found to be largely ineffective by Consumer Reports, but they did a full research paper and found that the two of them that performed best were Optory and Easy Opt-Outs. And if you compare the price between the two of them, you will see that Easy Opt-Outs is a far better deal. I actually use both Optory and Easy Opt-Outs. And I've been playing around with Optory. And while it's also a great service, I think that Easy Opt-Outs makes far more sense for most of you listening because it's less than $20 a year. It's $19.99 a year, whereas Optory is far more. They've been a long-term sponsor of this podcast, and I'm really happy to have them still on. So if you want to take control of your data on the internet and prevent random people from looking up where you live and your phone number and things like your email and things about your family members, this is a great service to automate the manual removal you'd otherwise need to do. Check out Easy Opt-Outs down in the description. I want to thank them again for sponsoring this podcast. And now back to AI Slop. So this is a bit of a continuation from last week's report, which talked a lot about AI features that aren't there to really serve you. And trust me, we also have butt-to-cloud encryption, which is really funny, and that's the next story. But I just wanted to start off by saying this is a continuation of last week. Microsoft has dropped AI sales targets in half after salespeople missed their quotas. This is coming after last week's head of AI tweet, who said, "I just don't understand why people think AI is overrated, blah, blah, blah." And it's like, dude, maybe it's just not that good for you guys and people don't like it. Well, head of AI person, just more evidence to put in on your plate that perhaps people don't want this. The company actually promises customers, and this is something they do, that agents can automate complex tasks and it can do all these crazy cool things and you should buy it because it's great. But according to The Information, that's a proper noun, The Information, one US sales unit set quotas for salespeople to increase customer spending on a product called Foundry, which helps customers develop AI applications, by 50% is what they cut it by. Less than a fifth of salespeople in that unit met their Foundry sales growth targets. In July, Microsoft lowered those targets to roughly 25% growth for the current fiscal year. In another US Azure unit, most salespeople failed to meet an earlier quota to double Foundry sales, and Microsoft cut their quotas to 50% for the current fiscal year. It's pretty simple, and this is from Ars Technica. The sales figures suggest enterprises aren't yet willing to pay premium prices for these AI agent tools. I just wanted to leave that out there. And they talk about the gap between promise and reality and how, yes, there might be a place for AI in large language models, but they are not to the hype that they're being presented to us by. So just remember that these companies have a lot to gain and they're riding on this hype. And I do think eventually that hype will settle back down to reality. And maybe this is the beginning of that. So we will keep you updated. And also continuing on last week's AI stories, I covered how we're going to start seeing more and more services start to roll out ads into their AI agents, and the enchidification process will begin. For those who aren't familiar with enchidification, it's a term that was coined by... You ever just have a brain fart while you're about to say someone's name? It's Cory Doctorow. Cory Doctorow coined this term enchidification. He has a whole book on it now. And the concept is you roll out a service and you make it the ubiquitous service that everybody uses. You make it really good. You might even take a temporary loss on the service in terms of profits. But once you get all consumers hooked, then you start pivoting over to business customers. And then you slowly enchidify the consumer side of things so that you only prioritize enterprise and business customers. This is arguably where Microsoft has been with Windows for a long time. And then you finally get to the end of enchidification, which is you screw over and try to enchidify the experience for enterprises and your businesses as well. And then your whole service just sucks. It's a really cool term that I think kind of encapsulates all the stuff that happens with all these big tech services and how a lot of us might say, man, tech just isn't as cool or awesome as it used to be 10 years ago. And it's because of things like enshittification. And now to the actual story after that context, a leak has confirmed that OpenAI is preparing ads on ChatGPT for public rollout. This was found in the Android app beta, and it has references to an ads feature. Of course, Bleeping Computer has no issue saying ads might actually work in ChatGPT's favor. Who would have thought that running ads worked in the company's favor that runs ads? What about how this might not work in favor of the 800 million people that use ChatGPT? Just a thought. Just a counterpoint to maybe consider, and ideally one that ChatGPT is considering as well. I just went to an ad filtering summit last month in Cyprus, where I was with Brave engineers, Google engineers, etc. And all these smart people talk about ad blocking, and I am firmly in the camp of blocking ads, and I encourage everybody on YouTube to do this, but not because ads are inherently bad, but because ads currently on the internet, especially on platforms like YouTube, are a security concern as well as a privacy one. There is almost no way to engage with ads online without having your data being swept up by companies that can do a lot of malicious things with it. So the fact that this might be rolling out to where you might be sending your most sensitive personal information is deeply concerning. So please follow this closely. You do not want to be using something that you send and upload personal information to that sends all your data to every advertiser who wants to pay for it. And now, before we get into the defense bulletin where I cover the data breaches and updates to maybe the good services that we enjoy, I have a really hilarious story. And I actually heard about this first from my good friend John Ospe from Crypti, who messaged me. Some funny puns to go along with it, such as rear end-to-end encryption, and their business is B2C, but to cloud. And that's because Kohler, who... I didn't know this, for the record. They have a homepage, if you're on the video version, that you can see here. Kohler is this thing that you attach to your toilet. No, not a bidet, which I encourage everybody uses if you want to be hygienic. No, this is something you install in your toilet, which takes photos and has other sensors on there to analyze your droppings. I think that's the most PC way I can say that on this podcast. And of course, someone actually analyzed their claims if they were actually end-to-end encrypted. And why is it just so predictable? No, it is not end-to-end encrypted. Now, before the encryption, I just want to comment that I want everyone to pause this podcast and take a guess, like actually take a guess. Pause the video, pause the audio. How much do you think the monthly, and actually, if you're watching the video, you already see it, but how much do you think this monthly subscription costs for this device? And if you guessed anything less than $500 a month, you are wrong. It is $600 a month for this thing. So this researcher came forward and pretty much found that they use end-to-end encryption as a term to describe the protection the app provides for data. And many media outlets, and it links to three different ones, including CNET, including The Verge, and including TechCrunch, who included this claim in their articles covering the launch of the product. Now, here's the twist. Responses from the company make it clear that contrary to common understanding of the term, they actually are able to access data collected by the device and associated application. In fact, they even state that the data collected by the device and app may be used to train AI models. So, okay. Now, the article actually said, I was just about to get into this, end-to-end encryption, for those who aren't aware, secures data so that only the sender and a chosen recipient are able to view it. This means that you and the other party controls the private key and that no one else is able to intercept the message and be able to read it. This is what we find in things like WhatsApp, iMessage, and Signal, and any other end-to-end encrypted messenger that knows what the hell they're doing. When you log into your bank's website, you're not really using end-to-end encryption because your data is being stored on their server, and that's how they're able to feed you your information. If you walk into your bank and ask them to pull up your last five transactions, a random person who works there can actually pull up your account and give you those five transactions. Something that's zero knowledge or end-to-end encrypted, though, they'll be like, oh, we can't access that data because you have the private key. So, you know, you're going to have to unlock that yourself. It puts the control in your hands. And that's really important for devices like this that are collecting such sensitive information, like, I guess, your droppings. And this isn't rare technology. Apple Health defaults to using end-to-end encryption, whether or not you use advanced data protection in iCloud, so that is just a staple feature there. Now, the funniest part is that Kohler actually made a very common mistake that a lot of people make. Well, not people who quite know what they're doing. It's that they came forward and said user data is encrypted at rest when it's stored on the user's mobile phone, toilet attachment, and on our systems. Data in transit is also encrypted end to end as it travels between the user's device and our systems, where it is decrypted and processed to provide our service. They additionally told the researcher, we have designed our systems and processes to protect identifiable images from access by Kohler Health employees through a combination of data encryption, technical safeguards, and governance controls. Now, what's really great here, if any of you are following and reading between the lines, what they're referring to as end-to-end encryption here is actually just HTTPS encryption between the app and the server, something that's been a basic security practice for 2 decades, plus encryption at rest. Now, if you want kind of a breakdown for this, HTTPS is pretty much what almost every website nowadays defaults to. You'll see this in your URL. And what that means is that there's an SSL certificate on the website and that there's almost an encrypted tunnel between you and the website so that no one can read in and be able to scan passwords that you're sending off to this website. It's something that is just basic security. What it doesn't do, however, is protect you from information that you're directly giving the website. The website will still be able to view anything you put into it. If you put in an email to a service that has an SSL certificate, it can still read your email and you are trusting their implementation of how they access your password. It is common practice to hash this password so that not even the service gets your password, but you are still trusting the service with the data that you put into it. This is no different from what Google Drive does. Google Drive implements HTTPS encryption, which encrypts what you're uploading and the packets you upload to Google Drive so that only Google gets access to them. But Google still has access to the documents and they can fully read all of them, and they do read all of them. And they do use it to train AI depending on what settings you have enabled on your Google account. End-to-end encryption or zero knowledge with something like Google Drive would mean that they actually can't. It means that it's encrypted on your device so that what is actually uploaded just looks like random gibberish to Google, and they're just storing the data. And without the encryption key that only you have, they can't read the data. And that's actually what it objectively means. So Kohler is either dumb. I don't say that word often, but they're either dumb or they are just pretending that they didn't make a mistake. Either of those scenarios are quite harmful to the people who are misled into thinking that they had end-to-end encryption on their devices. So anyway, this is a quite humorous story, and hopefully this could be an opportunity for me to teach you all something. But it's worth mentioning, it isn't always that humorous. This story was a big throwback to 2021 during the pandemic, when Zoom had to pay an $85 million fine for lying about encryption and sending data to Facebook and Google. Now, for the purposes of this, I'm not going to talk about the Facebook and Google thing, but they actually did the same exact thing. Zoom said, we have end-to-end encryption. Look, we're great. Look at us. But they never actually had proper end-to-end encryption. They defined transport encryption as end-to-end encryption. Now, for the record, Zoom has fixed this, and there now are ways to have end-to-end encryption properly with Zoom. And now, my friends, we have the fully rebranded Defense Bulletin. It's the same thing that you're all used to. It's going to be the data breaches and also service updates. Just a slightly better name, I think. So to start off with the data breaches, admins and defenders grid themselves against a maximum severity server vulnerability. This has to do with React. This is a high-risk vulnerability, so please look into this if you use anything with React. I'm low-key expecting to maybe hear about some data breaches as a result of this in the coming weeks, so stay subscribed to see if that happens. A financial software provider, Marquis Software Solutions, is warning that it suffered a data breach that impacted dozens of credit unions across the U.S. 400,000 customers have been impacted from the following 74 banks and credit unions, so I would check out the sources to see if yours is one of them, and hopefully you'll be reached out to if you are one of those people. And fun fact, this actually likely was related to the Sonic Wall bug, which we did cover on this podcast already, so that was an extension of that. There's a critical flaw for the WordPress add-on for Elementor, which is exploited in attacks. It's used on 10,000 websites, and if you do use this plugin, be sure to look into it. The French DIY retail giant Leroy Merlin has disclosed a data breach. I did not see a cited number, so if you are a customer of theirs, it's worth checking the sources for more information. Freedom Mobile has disclosed a data breach exposing customer data. This is the fourth largest wireless carrier in Canada. This is actually not their first data breach, so definitely keep an eye out on that. We have a couple universities here. The University of Phoenix has disclosed a data breach after an Oracle hack. I don't see a number, but they said they're reviewing it and will be contacting people who are impacted. Similarly, the University of Pennsylvania has confirmed a new data breach after also an Oracle hack. They are also in the process of directly notifying individuals. This one was concerning, and I almost made it its own story, but I didn't feel like I actually had enough to talk about. But it's a data breach at analytics giant Mixpanel, which leaves a lot of open questions. And this actually is a pretty deep dive, but with very little information to base anything off of. But this actually like tracks everything you do on your screen, taps, clicks, etc. And there was a data breach that they released right before Thanksgiving in the US, which I'm sure wasn't unintentional. And there is still a lot to be kind of discovered about this. So if you kind of want to get a head start on figuring that out, check out the sources. The SmartTube YouTube app for Android TV was breached to push malicious updates. So if you use this, please, please, please look into that story. Retail giant Coupang had a data breach which impacted 33.7 million customers. And this is a South Korea retailer. Shady Panda browser extensions amassed 4.3 million installs in malicious campaigns. This is a malware operation. That's what's called Shady Panda. And yes, this does take what otherwise seems like fully okay and awesome extensions to install in your browser and does malicious things with them. So definitely check out the sources to see if one of your extensions was the ones impacted. Japanese beer giant Asahi says they had a data breach that hit 1.5 million people. So check that out if you like beer. Public GitLab repositories expose more than 17,000 secrets. So if you use GitLab, definitely check this out to see if this is something that concerns your projects. The French Football Federation has disclosed a data breach after a cyber attack. All people should be notified, and I did not see a number for the amount of people. This one was a very interesting article from 404 Media where there is some kind of exploit or something that's happening in Apple Podcasts where someone is trying to hack people through Apple Podcasts. And yes, this sounds crazy because it is. Both on the iOS and Mac versions of the podcast's app, there is this weird thing going on where there's this malicious podcast that literally just links to malicious websites. So check that out if you're curious for a good story. I almost made that another story to highlight, but there wasn't enough time. Okay, now I'm going to keep the updates as quick as I can. So Session, the end-to-end encrypted messenger, has put out a overall proposal for protocol V2. And kind of the exciting things about this is that it adds perfect forward secrecy, which is one of the biggest criticisms of Session's encryption, and also post-quantum support as well. So if you want to look into how they're proposing to do this, I would definitely check out the sources. This next one I'm adding in because I think it's important for the Linux ecosystem, which needs more professional tools. In fact, one of the reasons why we don't produce on Linux is because Affinity does not have support on Linux. And there was an article that was put out that Affinity is seriously consider releasing things on Linux. And this is in light of the Canva buyout. So this actually could be really cool. This comes from the global marketing lead that pretty much said internally, it's one of the top requests from their users. And they actually are considering releasing on Linux. And they cover more in the article. But this is your reminder that companies do listen if enough of you actually say something. So if you want to see Affinity and other professional tools on Linux, bug the hell out of them. And if you don't like Affinity and you like Adobe, if Affinity does this, it'll put more pressure on Adobe to follow. So please look into this if you're curious. I think it would be huge for Linux. Google is going to expand their Android scam protection feature to Chase and the Cash App in the US. I've actually never used this feature, so I can't really comment too much on what this will look like. But apparently, Google has this thing built into Google Play services that scans if something is a likely scam, and they're rolling that out to a couple banking apps now. Brave put out a quick blog about this new skills feature in Leo, which is Brave's in-browser AI assistant. And essentially, you can kind of have like pre-made templates and prompts that you can customize and use as a quote skill. So it seems like a pretty cool thing if you're somebody who uses AI stuff in Brave. I don't know what the Tor project has been doing this last week, but they've just been popping off on their blogs. So I have four articles from Tor. The first one is they kind of do some coverage over how they fight censorship in Iran and in Russia. So if you want to see how they do that, it's pretty interesting stuff. The second one has to do with Arty. Version 1.8.0 was released. If you don't know what that is their attempt to release a Tor implementation in Rust, which is memory safe and ideally a bit faster and more efficient. If for whatever reason you're a Tor browser alpha tester, so you use their alpha, not just their beta, but their alpha, they do have updates to their release channels that are very important for you to consider on their blog that is also in the sources. I normally join this every year, and I recommend you all tag along as well. The Tor Project on December 10th at 5 p.m. UTC is doing their State of the Onion Community Day. So you can tune into this. It's normally a live stream, and they normally release kind of like what the year's looked like and what's kind of coming ahead. So you can be the first one to see what they've got cooking at the Tor Project, and you can find links to that already in the sources. AdGuard is an ad blocking, DNS filtering privacy company, and they released really good coverage for Apple's attempt at a system-wide filtering API. If you haven't heard of this, Apple's released a new API that allows apps on iOS to actually be able to privately filter web traffic in a much more robust way than they've ever allowed them in the past, which companies like AdGuard are thrilled about. And this is really good for all of you as well. No mobile operating system has ever done something like this. It's not perfect, but this is really good coverage that shows how it works and kind of the good and bad of it. And this is actually written by Andre. And I already interviewed Andre on my other podcast, TechLore Talks, and that should be going live in the coming few weeks as well. Definitely check out TechLore Talks, the sister podcast, if you want to see more conversations with experts that are behind some of these services. This comes from the TechLore forum because Dorsey on the forum consolidated this much better than the GitHub repo did, but there is Thunderbird for iOS coming soon, and you can already see the GitHub repo for it. So if you're a Thunderbird user, expect an iOS app coming shortly, and you can learn more in the sources. This one was really exciting to see. The Wired put out a digital OPSEC guide for teens, and I really enjoyed it. It had a lot of basics here, and so if you have any teenagers and you're a parent or you are a teenager listening to this podcast and you want kind of just basics that are applicable to things that you're going through in your life, I thought they did a really, really good job kind of covering the basic things. So check it out. iVPN has new obfuscation called V2 Ray, which is now available on all of their platforms. So that's pretty cool stuff for bypassing censorship. Linux kernel 6.18 was officially released, and it could be the next LTS kernel series. So keep an eye on that if you're a Linux user. And on the topic of Linux, Steam on Linux has hit an all-time high in November, which is super exciting. I think the number is 3.2%, if I remember. Yeah, Steam on Linux is up to 3.2%, an increase of 0.15% for the month. And with that positive news out of the way, I want to thank you all for being here, as that concludes this week's TechLore Surveillance Report. If this analysis and this podcast episode helped you reclaim some control and keeps you up to date, definitely consider becoming a TechLorean by visiting the link down in the show notes. You'll gain access to some exclusive communities and get some perks, all while keeping the podcast growing and free for all of you out there. Please also take a moment to leave a rating, share the episode to spread digital freedom. I see a lot of the ratings that you all put on Apple Podcasts, and I saw the ratings as well on Spotify, so thank you all for engaging there. Thank you all for listening and being a part of the fight, and I'll see you all in the next episode of Surveillance Report.